Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast special guest edition of the Point Forward podcast. It's Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I got somebody special guest filling in for Jim Ozarski today. Jim Ozarski will be back. You'll hear him a little bit at the end of this podcast, but my guest is Eric Name, the one and only Eric Name from The Athletic. Eric Name, how are you?
I am great. I'm happy to do this. Typically, we do not record it when we talk, so this is going to be a fun experience. Typically, it's just you and me when we happen to run into each other at various things or go out for breakfast somewhere. So this is great.
Speaking of which, we are due for another round of breakfast. Blues Egg in West Dallas doesn't have to be the stop, but I'm a huge fan and I would happily go back. But I think it's your turn to pick. We got to go east side, don't we?
Yeah, we probably need to go east side. I have some thoughts. But I always have thoughts on food. That's not a surprise.
If you follow him on Twitter, I'm sure you do if you're listening to this conversation. He has a lot of thoughts. NBA Road Eats is a thing that Eric takes very seriously, but also the Milwaukee Bucks. He, as I'm sure many of you know, at The Athletic gets to take some pretty good deep dives into what's going on with the Milwaukee Bucks. And so I wanted to bring him on to talk about the first round of the playoffs, like the matchups. Right now there's, as we record this, before Thursday night's game against the Indiana Pacers. There are actually six teams that the Bucks could wind up facing in the first round of the playoffs. My guess is that list starts to get paired pretty dramatically tonight. There's really only one or two teams that are strong likelihoods, that being the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. We'll talk about them, certainly. But also I wanted to flash back a little bit to a story you wrote at The Athletic a couple days ago after the Spurs lost. The Milwaukee Bucks defense has not been good. They've been giving up massive point totals to teams that I got to think Bucks fans are a little concerned about, you know, teams that they should be beating. So if you could, obviously I don't want you to reveal the substance. I want people to go read it. But give me some bullet points that you kind of broke down in terms of, I mean, should we be panicking because the Bucks are giving up massive, their defense is struggling? Should we feel like they're still going to have it fixed in time for the playoffs with just a couple games left? I mean, I guess, is it fixable is the question on everybody's mind. And I, you know, I don't know. Talk to me. I'm a little nervous over here.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting this year because in previous years, this Bucks team, at least to me, and, you know, I think my guy at The Athletic, Seth Partnow, formerly Bucks director of basketball research, always used to kind of say, like, you know, the Bucks are elite at really just beating the crap out of bad teams. Like, that, they're just really good at it. They've been good at it for a long time, and that's, you know, when you're talking about net rating, when you're talking about point differential, that was a big part of the Bucks really having these massive, massive point differentials, this historic net rating. That was like a really big part of it. And the Bucks haven't done that this year. When they play bad teams, they don't beat them by a lot. They tend to be closer games. There aren't these, you know, massive blowouts. And I think a big part of it is they tend to play with their food, and that isn't necessarily a trait that I think you want. I think we've heard again and again, whether it's LeBron James led teams or even Bucks teams, like, you don't want to be thinking like, oh, well, we'll just turn the flip, like, we'll just flip the switch and everything will be fine. That's always a concern. Like, you don't want to, like, kind of lean on that. But I think more than anything, we've seen them just really play to the level of a couple teams. And, you know, it was five games I know people were really freaking out about, right? Like, you give up 114 to the Nets, 118 to the Nets, 134 to the Wizards, 133 to the Rockets, and then 146 to the Spurs. And, you know, I think those first two games, it's a part of getting used to the new NBA. If the Nets scored 114 and 118, you've held them under their season average. You have to reframe the conversation. Like, this isn't an NBA where giving up 100 points means anything. Like, this is the best offense in the league that you gave up 114 and 118 to. You held them down. Like, those were good performances. And you see 114, 118. How is that a good performance? But this is a different NBA. Like, this is a different offense. And then, you know, I think with the Wizards and Rockets, those two teams shot a lot of threes. They played at a very fast pace. And the Bucks didn't really, I mean, care. It just didn't really look like that. I think against the Wizards that night, I think I might have told Jim, like, I think the only people that wanted to be in the arena less than me might have been the players. Like, it was a back-to-back, you know, everything was just kind of funky, and, you know, they just didn't really bring it in. But the San Antonio game, I think there was, like, some real things where you have to look out for. The Bucks have been susceptible to, you know, there's a couple different things that can really unlock the Bucks. Like, if you're good from the mid-range, you're good at floaters, you're going to have a nice night against the Bucks because those are the shots that they want to give up. The Spurs, Greg Popovich has talked again and again about how he hates the three-point revolution, so his teams shoot a ton of mid-rangers, and they're really good at them, and they find guys that are good at them. So they took advantage of that, and then I think one of the other things is, you know, you can see guys off the dribble threes are a thing that the Bucks just really haven't been able to fix. Like, if they are playing their normal pick-and-roll coverage and not switching, that's a shot that you can get, and Patty Mills took advantage of them, you know, three or four times in that game from the three-point line and really put them in a tough spot. So, you know, I think there's, like, panic is too much. Like, that's too far. But, you know, are there still things that, you know, you see the Bucks do time to time that you would hope would have been fixed by the end of the season? Yeah, probably. So I do still think there are some ways for this team to defend better, but it's probably not as bad as a lot of people may have thought the last five or six games have gone.
This is a question I'm going to ask cautiously, but you mentioned the players not looking like they're into a game. Is it a question of effort? Understanding that, you know, I think that sometimes gets overdone. There can be games like against the Rockets where it does not matter really if you win or lose. I mean, it'd be nice not to lose to the last place team in the West or of all the NBA. But, I mean, that doesn't really dramatically alter the Bucks. I guess you could argue two or three seed. It has some bearing. But then to show up against those better teams, the Nets, you know, it makes you feel like, well, they can at least hang with the teams they're going to see in the playoffs. But in a seven-game series when you got to be completely locked in, you can't have any slips of effort. You got to be that, you know, you just can't. You can't mess up. One game is going to be the difference in the series. So effort is a loaded word, but is that something you're talking about or thinking about here when you see these defensive performances?
Yeah, effort might not be the right word. I always tend to think of when people say effort, that's suggesting like, you know, like a player's not trying hard or, you know, they're not giving their all. And if you're not doing that in an NBA game physically, you're going to get embarrassed. Like, you're just going to get embarrassed. So I don't often find that to be the problem. I think a lot of the times what you're talking about when you're talking about effort is like your mental focus. Like, if this offensive set has three steps and you defend the first two right, and then, well, whatever, it's the Rockets, I don't care about the third step, that's effort. That is like mental effort that you're willing to exert on that night. Or, you know, if on the offensive end you can get a good shot after 6 seconds when a great shot would have been available after 13 seconds, that's effort. But it might not come across that way. It might come across as Drew Holiday having a 4-for-15 night or Chris Middleton being 5-for-13 or whatever their numbers were, I think, in that last game against Orlando or San Antonio. That's kind of where the effort is. So I don't honestly, like, the fact that you could see them do it the way that they did it against the Nets, like, there's not a team that you have to be more locked in against. And, right. And granted, that's only two star Nets, not three star
yep.
Nets.
Yep, for sure.
But yeah. they were locked in those moments. Like, all of those offensive actions, they were able to guard. They switched some against Durant. They played them straight up. Like, they were able to really defend well against Kyrie Irving. So I tend to think this year especially, the regular season product might not be as predictive as it tends to be. And I think we're going to see in the end, but I've kind of treated this season as the peaks mean a little bit more than the valleys, just because I think all these teams are susceptible to more valleys because of the condensed schedule and just kind of how strange and weird this season has been with COVID. I know it's been weird for me. And again, I guess media starts with me, so that means something. But like, I know that's like first world problems, but like, I really do think this season has been weird for players, and it's been something that they've had to try to figure out how to deal with.
Yeah, the number of injuries, the number of guys sitting out across the league. I mean, I don't know if the regular season you can draw any conclusions to what we're going to see. The Bucks actually have been one of the healthier teams, even though they've had Giannis missing at certain stretches. They've been one of the healthiest teams in the league. So. It's very hard to know what that Nets team is going to look like in the postseason and a lot of teams. So going back quickly to the Spurs, you're talking about a team with mid-range being such a weapon against the Bucks, and that's not necessarily their forte. Obviously, I want to know, is there a team in the playoffs that matches what the Spurs do, that kind of mirrors that, and is going to be dangerous? You know, it's much easier, I think, to see teams giving up a lot of three-pointers. That's been something fans have focused on the last few years, that the Bucks give up too many threes, and they still give up their share of threes. I mean, the Miami Heat give up more threes, I think, than anybody. So, like, it's not like they're the worst team out there, or even the teams in the playoffs that they will see are any worse or any better at that skill. But has that shifted? Is it no longer the threes that are really going to burn this team? Is there a mid-range team in the postseason that the Bucks should be particularly concerned about?
Obviously, I think the thing you're going to circle is the Miami Heat, right?
Of course. Jim called them the boogeyman, and I'm terrified of them. I ain't gonna lie. I don't want to see that team in the first round.
Right. And I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about because this Heat team is not playing as well as they were.
All the same dudes, though. All the same dudes.
All the same dudes. But they're not playing in the bubble, which I do think, you know, if you look at some of the outlier shooting performances, like the biggest ones in the league, like Anthony Davis shooting 45% from the 3-point line, that's a huge one. Massive. It was like that. I'm not gonna say that's the reason they won the championship, but man, it was a big part of it. And now he's shooting 31, 32% from the 3-point line. So that was big. And when you look at some of those other ones, like you're gonna look at kind of what Goran Dragic did in the bubble. He was fantastic. Every shot, he was shooting a super high percentage from all over the floor. You're gonna look at Tyler Hero. He was another one where he has this big breakout. He was so good. His value was so high that he were like, nah, I don't know if we're gonna trade for James Harden because we might have to give up Tyler Hero. And again, you know, a Whitnall High School product. So good for Tyler that his value was ever that high. But I think we're probably gonna realize that oh, that was probably an outlier and he's not that good. So I do think that Heat team deserves to be the boogeyman because Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the league, period. There's not a
Well, and Jimmy
conversation.
Butler is the scariest 21% 3-point shooter in the history of man.
Correct. So you're still gonna fear that team. Bam Adebayo's gotten even better. So you're gonna fear that team, and that team can do those things, right? Like Bam Adebayo can hit some mid-range jumpers. Goran Dragic is really good in the in-between game. Jimmy Butler's really good in the in-between game. Tyler Hero, when Tyler Hero is cooking, is really good in the in-between game. So those same weaknesses can be exploited. And then I think the interesting thing for me always with the Bucks is I was having this conversation with somebody the other week, thinking about the Nets and how the Nets might hurt them, right? And everyone in their mind has, oh, the Bucks give up a lot of threes, so that means Joe Harris is going to have a big series, right?
Right.
No, not really. They do really good against good shooters. Duncan Robinson, he didn't really hurt the Bucks in that series, because they know that that guy can shoot. It's the guys that they think can't shoot. It's going to be a guy like Jay Crowder, and this year I guess it would be Trevor Ariza for the Heat, where you're just not going to care about this guy, and then he's going to shoot a bunch of open threes. Or if it's the Nets, it's not going to be Joe Harris, it's going to be Jeff Green, because you leave Jeff Green open because you don't think he can shoot that well. And that's a good place to stash Giannis or whatever it might be. So I do think the threes are still going to be a problem. Teams are still going to try to find a way to create open threes, and the Bucks are still going to be willing to give more threes to mediocre to good shooters than great shooters. So that problem is still going to exist. The mid-range stuff is still going to exist to some extent. But the Bucks never had a PJ Tucker. You never had that guy where it was like, this guy's coming to the game, we're going to switch everything, good luck. Everything you shoot is going to be tough. You're not going to get into the lane. The Bucks didn't have that guy last year. So I do think, you know, it's fascinating to me that the Heat end up being one of the two very likely matchup options with the Heat and the Knicks. I think the Heat are 55% as we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, and the Knicks are 45% or something like that. Where the Heat are the most likely possible matchup, because the Heat to me present a really interesting kind of idea, right? Because if you get the Heat in the first round, there's two ways that series goes. One, you exercise your demons, and then you feel like you are the best team on the planet,
That's
right?
true, yeah.
Like all the things you've been talking about. We made these adjustments. We're more flexible. Jrue Holiday's better. PJ Tucker. In this hypothetical, if you beat the Heat, you can say all those things. Yeah. You can feel good about everything. The flip side is you don't. You haven't figured out anything. You lose to the Heat. And then you're looking at the very real possibility that Mike Budenholzer is gone as the head coach. And it's truly like a matchup that deserves boogeyman status, but also deserves, like, I mean, if you're talking about how you propel a championship run, man, exercising all those demons, like getting the karma back from everything that happened last season. Like, I mean, they would feel like they could beat the world. Like, put the Toon Squad together, whatever. Like, let's go. Like, we will beat the Space Jam team. We're good. Like, we got this. So I think it's fascinating. You know, as a storyteller, I'd love to see it happen. I also think the Knicks series would be really interesting. Like, I think there's a bunch of good teams in the East this year. So it's more interesting than it's ever been before, and it's certainly more interesting than the Pistons or Magic's made it in either of the last two seasons as the number 8 seed.
Yeah, it's a very different year. Even if the Bucks had been the 1 seed, I think, you got the play-in tournament, but it's not going to be quite the walkover it was against Detroit or even Orlando. But I'll talk more about these other teams. By the way, all that stuff, I understand it. I'd rather the Knicks. Just give me the Knicks. I don't need any of this, like, oh, maybe this is the springboard to bigger. No.
That's fair. Totally.
Send Jimmy Butler to the other side of the bracket, please. But just this Bucks team on a you know, wide view here. Do you think they are better? I mean, and maybe that's not even the right way to answer it, because wins, losses, they aren't better than they were last year necessarily. But they've been preparing for this moment. Are they better equipped? Because they have P.J. Tucker, because they've been experimenting on defense all season long, because, you know, they've got Jrue Holiday, obviously. Are they better equipped to take down the Heat to get to the NBA Finals?
I'll answer your first question. They're better. Yeah. And I'll answer your second question. They're better equipped.
All right.
This is the best version of the Bucks that we've seen under Mike Budenholzer, which means, you know, that might mean they're the best version of a Bucks team since the 80s.
Definitely.
Like, that's kind of what we'd be talking about. You know, it's unfortunate, obviously, that that just so happens to be the same season where the Nets managed to make a bunch of trades and put together a big three that, you know, just might not be rivaled by anyone else. Like, even if the Bucks are better and have more talent, like, it just might not be enough against the Nets. But, yeah, I mean, I just think back to so many games this season, and you can pick the season opener against the Celtics where Jrue Holiday goes crazy and hits big shots. You can go to the Memphis game where he hits a big shot. You can go to the Clippers game where he's cool under pressure and starts the sequence that gets Giannis a monster dunk with 30 seconds left. Like, you can just go through all of these things, and there's no, hey, we're going to go out and put Pascal Siakam on Eric Bledsoe, and he's not going to cover Eric Bledsoe. He's literally going to leave him wide open in the corner, and he's going to help and build the wall bigger than the wall's ever been built before. You can't do that to Jrue Holiday. Like, if you leave Jrue Holiday open, he's going to make you pay. He's having the best three-point shooting season of his career, and that's as much a function of role as it is shooting empty arenas, as it is just getting great looks from playing with Giannis and Chris. But, like, you can't leave Jrue Holiday open. So now you have a third guy that you have to pay attention to. And then defensively, the Bucks were great at the drop scheme, right? Like, that was the best defense in the league, which I think gets lost, right? Because they didn't come through in the postseason. Mike Budenholzer is a terrible coach, and he doesn't know anything, despite having the league's best defense 2 years. That wasn't a fluke. You don't do it 2 years in a row if it's a fluke. Like, that means it wasn't a fluke. That means they knew what they were doing. And then, again, this year, they're the ninth-ranked defense in the league. If you take a look at my mentions, if you take a look at the responses to even the story I put up about the Spurs game, like, I had people shocked that they were the ninth-ranked defense in the league, because you just got so used to this team being dominant defensively that they're in a spot now where anything just feels like, man, they stink. Like, they absolutely suck on defense, and that just isn't the case. So, you know, I think this is a defense that doesn't have to rely on the drop scheme. They're still good at it. Like, if you have a unit out there that they can play drop against, it'll be great. Brook Lopez is still fantastic at it. He still knows all the tricks. So he'll be great there. But if you have a bunch of wings and you want to go small, fine. Do it against PJ Tucker. Like, you're going to have to go through PJ Tucker. And if you want to try to get a switch off of him, okay, it's Jrue Holiday. Oh, you want to get a switch off him? It's Giannis. Oh, you want to get a switch off him? Okay, you found Chris Middleton. But it also took 15 seconds to find Chris Middleton. And now you have 5 seconds to try to hit a really tough shot against a 6'8" defender with a 6'10" wingspan. Good luck. Like, you did it, but good luck. And I just think this is a better team. They can execute more things. They can do more things. And, you know, I think there's some concern that they're not great at any one thing. But I think we learned that being great at one thing doesn't mean you're going to be great in the playoffs. Like, you have to have that versatility. Even if you aren't great at all of those things, you have to be able to do different things. You have to, you know, you're watching a Brewers game. I'm watching a Brewers game right now in the background. You have to be able to throw different pitches, right? Yeah. Like, you have to have a different way to kind of do this. And I think this is the most well-suited they've kind of been for postseason basketball.
And that's the difference between the two sports. You can hone your repertoire in bullpen sessions to the side. When you're trying to learn a new defense or different variations, it can't be, you know, in a gym, in a practice gym. It's got to be against real-life opponents with all five guys working in concert. And that's why there's been such a learning curve all season long. I think I can foresee the Bucks losing game one of a series, or going down 2-1 and having people freak out only to see them sort of offer, you know, like in games 4, 5, 6, they make those adjustments and it's different and they end up winning going away. I could see this happening already, even in the context of a 7-game series. But I want to talk briefly about a couple other teams that they're most likely to face. We talked about the Heat a little bit. The Knicks are a little bit of an unknown track record wise. You know, I haven't been in the playoffs since 2013. Julius Randle is the name I think everybody sort of knows at this point, with having close to an MVP season. But the Bucks have done kind of okay against them. 1-2. One of those games is a throwaway game with just Brook Lopez among the regular starters competing in that game.
I will not be here for the Nassus Adetokounmpo erasure.
You're absolutely right. My bad. I'm a terrible person. I'm really sorry at the Nassus. You are the truth, and I'm very happy to support more minutes for the Nassus. Except maybe not in the playoffs, but So the New York Knicks, how do they match up in your mind? What sort of obstacles do they offer, and how big of a test can they give the Bucks?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is going to be defense, right? Like, if you're going to play a Tom Thibodeau team, they're going to play really hard and they're going to play really physical defense and they're going to ugly up the game. And, you know, I just said, like, you're not going to see a lot of games in the 100s. Like, they're going to try to get one there, right? Like, they're going to try to get one right around 100. If they can make that the target score, that's the kind of drag-out, knock-down, fist-fight kind of game that you're talking about. And, you know, they had one with the Lakers, like, the other night. And obviously the Lakers were down a whole bunch of people. But that's kind of the goal of a Tom Thibodeau team. So I think that's kind of what you're looking at if you're looking against playing the Knicks is, you know, it's going to be ugly. And I think if you're the Bucks, you're obviously worried about Julius Randle. I think, you know, we're talking about outlier seasons last year in the bubble. You know, I think there's a real chance that in 5 years we look at Julius Randle's shooting numbers this year and go, oh, yeah, he was playing in empty arenas. Like, yep, that's going to come back down to earth because, I mean, he's putting together an all-NBA season. Whether that's, like, third team or not, like, that's nothing to kind of ignore. So I think to me, it's all about the defense with the Knicks. I think they can score enough offensively. I think at the start of the season, when you saw the Bucks play the Knicks, they had, you know, some really crazy shots. Julius Randle's hitting off the bounce threes. He's fading away. He's doing crazy stuff. And you're like, oh, you know, whatever, outlier game. And then you turn on the Knicks and you see Julius Randle hit step back threes a week ago and you're like, oh, that's real. Like, that's actually who he is this year. You know, I think Randall's a concern, Rose is a concern, you know, and they have a couple other guys that can shoot as well. So that's really the big thing to me, is like the Knicks are going to ugly up a series, and we've seen Thibodeau in the playoffs before and his teams play hard and they make it tough on you. And I don't think that's a spot where you're worried you're going to lose this series. You know, in my story at The Athletic, I kind of put, like, that's probably the team. Like, you're not going to fear the Knicks. Like, you're not going to be, I think, all that worried about them. But, you know, anything can happen in the playoffs, and you got to play hard every night.
Yeah, I'm just going to put this in the ether. Julius Randle is Chris Middleton playing in a bigger market. That's all that is. So, I don't know if Knicks fans will find this podcast, but that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Somebody told me yesterday, I was talking about his shooting splits, and someone's like, man, it's kind of crazy to think in two years, Julius Randle went from Giannis to Chris Middleton as far as like what he shoots and how he shoots. And I was like, that's hilarious. Because if you look at his shooting splits, he's shooting a ton of mid-rangers. He's shooting a ton of pull-up threes. He's totally de-emphasized going to the rim. It's a really weird shot chart, but it's working for him this year. So good for him.
Yeah, good for him. I personally don't think the Knicks will give him more. I mean, I certainly don't think they'll go to seven games or anything. I would think the Bucks should be in charge in that one. They don't scare me like the Heat does, but who knows? The Atlanta Hawks probably not going to face the Bucks unless the Hawks somehow lose to a couple really bad teams here at the end of the season. I'm concerned about Bogdan Bogdanovic's revenge series. Not that he's like enacting revenge against the Bucks, but I could just see the panic settling in the eyes of Bucks fans. Again, I don't think this matchup comes to pass, but maybe a couple thoughts on the Atlanta Hawks. The Bucks have had some success against them. Again, they had a game where not a lot of people played. What do you think of when you think of Atlanta?
Points. A whole bunch of points.
Oh, yeah.
Like, their whole thing, and obviously, I'm sure Nate McMillan would be upset hearing me say this, but, like, they're going to try to outscore you. And that's been, you know, a weird thing for Nate McMillan. He's a guy that loves defense, hard-nosed, physical play, just kind of like Tom Thibodeau. But they've really gotten hot under Nate McMillan. A weaker schedule had some things to do with that. Returning some players from injuries had some things to do with that. When you're looking at it, it's really just, what are they going to do against Giannis? And I don't think they don't have an answer. And if you don't have an answer to that question, I just don't know how you can beat them in a series. Like, sure, maybe you can steal one or two by outscoring them. But, I mean, even in the game where they do that, right, in Atlanta, like the big comeback, everyone's freaking out, the Bucks suck at defense, Bogdanovic hits 4 or 5 from the three-point line, Lou Williams goes 4 or 4 from the three-point line in the fourth quarter, and they come back and win. Like, even in that game, like, I don't think the Bucks had PJ Tucker in that one. They didn't have a couple other people. Like, they weren't as good as they can be defensively, and also that was insanely hot shooting. So the Hawks can do that. That's a thing that could happen, but I think ultimately you can try to outscore the Bucks, but, oh, by the way, go look at the Bucks' offensive efficiency. It's better than yours. So, good luck. I hope it works out for you.
Yeah. Again, that's an unlikely matchup. Atlanta's got a pretty good chance here to get the number 4 seed and face either the Knicks or the Heat in that 4-5 matchup. Eric, thank you so much for joining. Before I let you go, just, I guess, any last thoughts on these last few regular season games? It remains to be seen who's going to play, how hard everybody's going to play. The Bucks could still get the 2, but they need the Nets to take a loss, an unlikely loss against one of their last 2 opponents. So it's looking like the 3 seed. Anything you want to see here in these last 3 games before we get into the postseason?
You know, not particularly. I think the Saturday game gets really interesting. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in your mentions are going to be like, Bucks need to lose this game to the Heat so that they don't have to play the Heat. That's happening.
It's already happened. I've had the conversation with a number of friends in the last week. And, you know, the thing I always like to remind people is that the basketball gods are always watching.
Always.
They are very aware of anything you might do to get a matchup that you believe to be favorable. And then you can pay for that in a karmic way. So
we'll 40 minutes for Thanasis.
I think there's like a real possibility that they end up doing that. But we'll see if they do or don't. And, you know, I think it leads to a really interesting conversation. Like, that is something that the Bucks throughout this season have not really focused in on. They haven't been thinking, hey, we want the 1 seed or the 2 seed or the 3 seed, or we want to make sure we see this team or that team. I know fans will want them to do it, because they don't want to see the Heat. But I don't know if I believe that the Bucks will actually go full on you know, sit everybody and say like, hey, we're gonna take this loss so the Heat can move up in the stands and we don't have to see him. Like, that would kind of surprise me. So I'm very excited for the freak out on Saturday night, no matter what they decide, whether they play everyone and Bucks fans want them to lose, or if they play no one and Bucks fans want them to lose. I'm not sure how it's going to go down, but I'm sure my mentions will be on fire.
Yeah, I definitely have a hard time following the logic with Giannis starting in Houston on a bulky ankle against the last place team. And obviously he leaves that game early, but I never know what their process is going to be. And I would think that they would want to avoid a physical Miami Heat team no matter what, whether or not they beat them in the first round or are afraid of them. I'm sure they're not afraid of them, but like, who wants that series to go six bruising games or seven bruising games? I mean, they've got bigger fish to fry, so, and they're going to need to be full strength for the Nets and Sixers ahead. So, hey, man, really appreciate it. Again, Eric Name, he's with The Athletic. Again, I'm sure you guys are familiar with his work, but if not, please go check out theathletic.com. You can find him. He's the face of the Milwaukee Bucks media. I'm just going to say it with Matty V gone. I think you're like, are you the senior scribe at this point? You kind of are.
Oh, man. That, I mean, yeah, I guess so. What a strange thing to kind of think about. That's wild. I suppose so. It was a pleasure doing this. Over the years, I know Velasquez took a lot of shots at me on this podcast.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Liberally.
I'm just happy to get back and, you know, be a part of this. And I really wish he was around so, you know, I could take some shots at him as well. But, you know, he's doing great. He's going to go to Nashville and eat some hot chicken this weekend. So I'm very jealous of him.
And I'm coming to the East Side for breakfast sometime in the next couple of weeks. We're going
to
do this.
I look forward to it.
During the playoffs, no doubt. Once again, Eric Name of TheAthletic.com. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Break away from the webcam and start living life this summer with Milwaukee Sports and Social. Introducing Milwaukee Sports and Social, a brand new recreational co-ed softball and kickball league for the city of Milwaukee that is designed to help you and your friends make the most of summer 2021. Register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. Registration is only $99 per person, but listeners can take $5 off their registration with code BASKETBALL at checkout. Start enjoying your social life again. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. I am now joined by Jim Ozarski. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is back in action and wanted to catch him a little bit for this edition of the podcast. Jim just talked to Eric Name of The Athletic. We chatted a lot about the playoffs and some of the recent showings from the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm going to ask you the last question I asked him will be the first one I ask you. Is there anything left for you that you want to see over these last three games? Anything you want to know? Anything you think needs to be shored up? I mean, we talked about their defense not, you know, giving up massive point totals to teams that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Do you feel like this team needs to come together defensively still, and this might be the last bit of runway for that? Or is there just nothing more to go? Let's just get to the playoffs. How are you looking at it?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that can be done in three games. You know, JR, it can look great. You know, maybe they have a great day against Miami. You know, Chicago has given them some struggles, even without Zach LaVine. But, I mean, what are we really going to see? You're right. That's going to make you say, wow, they're ready to just kick it into overdrive. I guess maybe a couple 2-3, 30-point wins, right? Would make people feel pretty good about that. But I think, for me, JR, it's about are the core players healthy? You know, no Euro steps and elbows and falling down and not getting up type of things for Giannis and Antetokounmpo. No bone bruises or things like that for the other guys. So that's really what I'm looking for, is just being a healthy team. And, you know, really, that's about it.
A 30-point win against Miami on Saturday would definitely make me feel better, given that this team is still the team that I would be most afraid of among the teams that the Bucks could see in the first round, whether right or wrong. There is an interesting sort of scenario, you know, bubbling up here, though, and I talked about it with Eric a little bit. If the Bucks truly don't want to face Miami in the first round, whether because they're just a really physical matchup or because they are, you know, they have had success against the Bucks. There might be something in play where they would want to lose that game on Saturday and help Miami's chances of getting into the 4 or 5 spot. Try to talk a little bit about this at jsonline.com, the tiebreaker scenarios. Very unlikely they'd face the Hawks. It's going to come down, I think, to the Knicks or Heat. And the Heat kind of have a tougher road than the Knicks, so it's possible they still slip back into the six. I don't know what realistically we could expect the Bucks to do other than rest everybody. Like, they're not going to obviously actively try to lose a game or whatever, but I don't know how much they think about that, how much they care about that, if a first-round matchup at this stage matters at all. I do know it's going to be a little harder than it has been in the last couple of years, and you know, it's going to be a tough road any way you slice it. What do you think about that? Is there any credence to the idea that the Bucks should just sort of let Miami do what they want?
No, because if they maintain they weren't going to make a run for the two or the one seed by doing anything differently, I have a hard time feeling they'll really care about who they play first. I think if, let's say they play fantastic in Indiana, they have an off day, they come home. My guess is they don't want to run out the Axel Toupain lineup in the home finale. I mean, that's my guess. So at least not at the outset. Whereas that season finale in Chicago, the second night of a back-to-back, is when maybe you see Sam Merrill and Jordan Wara and Elijah Bryan and all those guys kind of get some run. So I don't think that's what's going to happen, JR. I think if there's a consideration, it may just be this is the last regular season home game. I haven't really cared about that previously, though. I know there was that stretch of games in March where the home fans were treated to, you know, the reserves. But I think if that happens, it's because of, as you said, the trying to rest and or get them in a feeling a certain way, as opposed to beating or losing to the Heat. I think that's just sort of an ancillary topic, at least in that locker room, my opinion.
We talked briefly about it with Eric, but very briefly. Mike Budenholzer's future. I know there are a lot of fans who just assume he's going to be gone if the Bucks lose, fall short of the Eastern Conference Finals at all, maybe, but certainly if they lose in the first round series, which I don't think could be completely ruled out, given what possibilities there are in matchups and stuff. And, you know, I don't know personally how I feel about that concept, that thought. I can't wrap my mind around a guy who guides a team to the best record in the NBA back-to-back years and then still manages to oversee a team, the number one defensive team back-to-back years, manages to still get them in the top 10 in defense, even as they're completely reinventing everything. Like, I don't know what else he's supposed to do there. And I know that there's going to be some frustration over the postseason stuff, but this whole season has been an experiment to be better in the postseason. And if you know, trying all this stuff still doesn't work, I don't know who they're going to find that's better than Mike Budenholzer. So give me your thoughts on this. Like, how hot is that seat? How in jeopardy is he if they, I think two different ways of looking at it, if they lose in the first round or if they lose to the Nets, presumably the Nets in the second round, and they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals. How big of a situation do you think this is?
Yeah, I mean, it was The Athletic that reported that Mike Budenholzer was on the hot seat. And really in that list, he was the only one commanding a team with a winning record. I mean, everyone else on that list was, you know, kind of your bottom feeders or a guy like Terry Stotts, who's coming up on a decade in Portland. Man, JR, I've really gone back and forth on this. I wonder if, well, first of all, who's calling the shots? I mean, is this John Horst? Is this the ownership?
Is this Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Well, Giannis, of course, will say he has no say, but that's...
Of course.
Well, put it this way. I don't think Giannis is going to get a coach fired.
Right.
I think he'll just kind of, you know, he'll probably be asked. But look, the ownership's being asked to foot a bill here going forward. And it's like, okay, well, when does that bill come due? Does it come due this season or after next season when literally the $70 million tax bill comes in? I don't know if a situation like Indiana informs them, you know, where the Pacers fire Nate McMillan, they hire a Popovich assistant.
And
that has been a disaster. Mm-hmm. And now Nate McMillan has gotten Atlanta doing the things that they thought they should be doing in Indiana.
Here, literally, like, the Hawks are going to be the 4 seed probably. Literally in the spot Indiana thinks it should be at this point. Oh, man.
Right. So all of the things you just said, I give Mike Budenholzer a lot of credit for doing the things that Bucks fans and even his star players have requested him to do, which is change and adjust and do different things and, you know, use these different players in different ways. But I could see it go both ways. I'm still in that boat where, yeah, if you lose to Miami in the first round of, and it's 7 games and you had a healthy squad and they hit 22 threes for 4 games, that's a tough deal. You lose to Brooklyn in the second round because those big three are healthy. I think that's the different. I think that's a different animal too. Cause you were built to beat that team. And I guess, JR, you'd argue, well, if you couldn't beat them in year one, how are you going to beat them in years two and three when they presumably played more? I know I'm sitting on the fence, JR, but I think that's really where this is at. I think this is the, unlike the Aaron Rodgers scenario up north, this is where ownership matters. And I don't have a temperature for Wes Edens and Mark Lazary and Jamie Dimon and how they will feel when a thing happens, whatever that may be.
We are trending toward the Bucks being the away team for the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Brooklyn Nets. Still possible that Milwaukee gets the 2 seed over Brooklyn, but it's gonna require some magic. It's gonna require, I think, pretty much the Bucks winning out and Brooklyn to lose one of its final 2 games against teams that Brooklyn should beat. And not only are they going to be on the road, Jim, but I think at this point, and this really kind of surprises me, they're going to be a pretty big underdog to face that trio. They haven't had to see this full trio of, you know, stars in Brooklyn during the regular season, and they're going to get the full brunt of what Brooklyn is capable of. We still don't really have a great picture, I think, because the regular season is so full of guys being out and in, you know, just the crazy condensed schedule. I don't think the postseason is necessarily going to evolve like we think it should on paper. But I don't think the Bucks making the NBA Finals at this point is going to be kind of a surprise to have to go this road that they're going to take. One last checkup, just the same question, the variation, the same question we always ask. Is this a good enough team to get to the NBA Finals? We know they are. We know they're good. I just don't know if they're better than Brooklyn. And in 7 games, I can't see a situation where the Bucks are better are good enough to win 4 games against Brooklyn in a head-to-head series. Am I just too pessimistic?
No, you're not too pessimistic. And unfortunately, I did not gain any sort of future X-Men of future past or whatever powers that were my injured list in here, JR. I did not. I don't have that crystal ball. They are good enough to get to the finals. And the reason I say that is I feel they can beat Philly, right? So it's Brooklyn that's the problem. And right now, James Harden just got back. And so he's going to have, 4 regular season games and, presumably 5 postseason games in round one? So they're going to have 9 games all together. I feel like if the Bucks would have gotten, let's say, 6 games against the Heat, 6 games against the 76ers, there's like real momentum going there, JR, right? And I feel that's a better version of the Bucks going into a series against the Nets than maybe 6 games against the Heat, and then it's just, you know, Brooklyn had been sitting there for a couple days just waiting at the Barclays. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the Bucks were that kind of locomotive that needed that little bit of they took down Philly and, you know, they exercised the demons of Miami. And, oh, by the way, maybe like Kyrie Irving decided to go home for 3 days during Eastern Conference Finals. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. I feel like, yeah, they're not quite there yet for them.
Well, hopefully the world, hopefully one of those random things happens and the Bucks win, win the series anyway. But But yes, yeah, so he is Jim Ozarski. Shorter conversation with him, but Jim, we'll obviously have a big preview coming on the podcast when these last three regular season games are in the books, looking ahead to their first round playoff opponent, whether it's the Knicks or the Heat or maybe the Hawks or maybe one of those play-in teams if the Bucks do manage to rise up to the number two spot. And yeah, we will take it from there. Jim, thanks for joining.
All right, sounds good, Jay. I'll talk to you then.
Find everything he has to say at jsonline.com. You can find this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. You know that already. Go find us, rate us, review us. Tell us how much you love us on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. Jim is at Jim Ozarski, Ozarski. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.